want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes. You can do it with propaganda, propaganda, propaganda. You can liberate the babies from their candy. It's so easy, it's a sin, you're gonna want to jump right in. You can always depend on propaganda. Life is so hard, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify their complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda, propaganda. If you need to change a subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda, propaganda, propaganda. Try and convince the folks the beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they see with their own eyes. It's amazing, propaganda. Life is so complex, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda, propaganda. Goes down easy like a snifter of old brandy. Gotta learn how to tinker with that hook, line, and sinker for easy to swallow propaganda. If you want to stir the pot, make it look like you're not. Just add a shot of propaganda. If you want to rule the roost and you need a little boost, I recommend propaganda. Propaganda.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C., and this week from New York City that the government does not want you to know. Well, we heard a lot of propaganda last night and the night before at the Republican National Convention. That song, by the way, is by Yikes McGee. He is one of the many people that have been demonstrating against the Bush administration, and of course, he does it through his music. And we're going to be playing Yikes McGee's music all this week. And I thought propaganda was particularly appropriate for the speeches that we heard last night and the night before. Two nights ago was McCain and Giuliani. Last night was Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Bush twins, and Laura Bush, our First Lady. And it was just interesting to me what they said and how they said it and who they're trying to get across to. And we're going to talk about that. It seemed to me that the themes that they mentioned were largely Democratic themes, things that Democrats have been working hard to promote, things like equal opportunity for all, and the idea that an immigrant can succeed in America. These are all things Democrats are promoting, but they're trying to pretend that the Republicans are promoting these things. And, of course, it was striking that they put two liberals on, Giuliani and Schwarzenegger, people who disagree with the vast majority of Republican Party platform. And then there's, of course, dare I say it, the Stepford wife, Laura Bush, who really wants, to me, typifies a sort of 50s woman where you sort of stand there quietly behind your husband and support everything he does. And, of course, there were the Bush twins that admitted they were young and irresponsible, much like their father was so many years ago. In fact, I don't think the apple falls too far from the tree. We're going to play their speeches as well. So, what, like I said, I'm busy watching the convention, so you don't have to. And I want to play for you some of the convention and my comments on it. But also, of course, you are always welcome to give your own comments on this. And if you agree with me, disagree with me, call in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can send emails, as many of you have, to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. Or, as always, you can add to our blustering, debate-filled comments back and forth on the weblog. Just, again, go to www.radioinsidescoop.com. Yeah, on Monday night, they talked almost exclusively about September 11th. It was like the September 11th night and basically how you could exploit New York City and the true terror that we face on September 11th and use that to support George W. Bush. yesterday was, I guess, the attempt at the kindler, gentler face. I don't know from you whether you thought it worked or not, but like I said, we'll play some of the speeches, and I want to respond to a number of the things that they said. Some I found could be persuasive if you didn't know all the facts. And so, hey, I'm a one-man truth squad trying to tell you what they're not telling you. That's my job here, and I want to start because yesterday we spent most of the time debating Republicans, and today I really want to go through the speeches one by one, talk about the highlights of them, and talk about, I guess, how I'd respond to them. I do think, though, it's important to note who was not there at the convention. Both the people of principle who were not there because they disagree with the policies of the administration, one of which, of course, is Nancy Reagan, the wife of former President Ronald Reagan, a real icon to conservatives. She refused to come. She does not support George W. Bush's ban on a lot of stem cell research, indeed on most stem cell research, anything outside the few strains that we already have, because Bush believes, and I'm sure it's based on his fundamentalist Christian tradition, but he basically believes that people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, children with diabetes, all of them should die rather than a one-celled embryo that was probably going to be thrown out anyway in a fertility lab. He thinks the one-celled embryo is more important than America's children, America's, living people. That's why Nancy Reagan wasn't there. And even more surprising, I think, was that the president's own Secretary of State, Colin Powell, wasn't there. Now, Colin Powell, of course, is someone who repeatedly warned President Bush about the dangers that he faced in Iraq. He said, if you break it, you bought it. It's very simple. You go in there, you ruin a country, you've got to, you take out Saddam Hussein, that's a vacuum. And you've got to be the police, you've got to be there, and that's a lot of expense, a lot of lives. Bush didn't listen. Colin Powell, in fact, received all the false intelligence, tried, in fact, to stop a lot of it, but was tricked by the right-wingers in the government, gave a lot of false information to the United Nations, made himself look very bad, and Colin Powell's not been a big fan of the administration ever since. Ever the loyal soldier, most of these things he gripes to my sources, and not just to my sources, but to Woodward and lots of reporters, and clearly Colin Powell will not serve in a new Bush administration if Bush should happen to be elected in 2004. I always say elected, not re-elected, of course, because he was not elected in 2000. He was selected by the Supreme Court. But it was very interesting. Colin Powell and Nancy Reagan were not there. Who was there? Well, Monday night, as I said, it was the Republican primary candidates of 2008. John McCain and Rudolph Giuliani, both of whom disagree with Bush's politics, I think, more than they agree. Disagree with Bush's policies more than they agree. Giuliani disagrees with virtually Bush's entire social agenda, whether it be, abortion rights or gay rights or gun control or separation of church and state or protection of the environment. Rudolph Giuliani agrees with the Democrats. He disagrees with Bush. McCain, of course, disagrees with Bush's huge government spending, pork barrel politics, vicious ads that he's run against John Kerry. And so both men have very, in fact, McCain obviously has a dislike, a strong dislike personally for George W. Bush, ever since George Bush and his turd blossom. That's Bush's name, not mine. Bush's turd blossom, political strategist Karl Rove, basically set apart to accuse John McCain of having sex and an illegitimate black baby. Accusing McCain of being a traitor in North Korea, doing push polls, setting up fringe veterans groups. The same things they're doing to John Kerry they did against John McCain, and John McCain, I think, has never quite forgiven President Bush. But he knows that he will never get the mainstream Republicans supporting him for the 2008 nomination unless he comes and goes and leads the charge for George Bush. Colin Powell doesn't have to do that. He's not going to be in any future Bush administration. But McCain's running for election in 2008, so when Bush hugs him, you can almost see the pain in McCain's eyes as he accepts the hug from someone he knows to be really a dirty campaigner and someone who can't be trusted on a lot of issues. Giuliani is too liberal for the great majority of Republicans. He might not have been too liberal for Eisenhower or even for Richard Nixon, but of course, Nixon was to the right of Eisenhower, and Reagan was to the right of Nixon, and George Herbert Walker Bush was probably about equal with Reagan, and then George Walker Bush is far, far to the right of his father. So the Republican Party has gone to the hard right and left Republicans like Rudolph Giuliani behind. But he's been a good soldier. He's gone on the tour. He's earned literally millions of dollars profiting off telling stories about what happened on September 11th, when he really did, I think, act in a very courageous way. He's profited from it, no question about it, profited financially. They're both running in 08, and I have to say, I don't think either has a chance. I think they'd have a chance if they were nominated to win, but I don't think they have a chance of winning the Republican Party. You got to be a hard-right religious conservative who believes in no separation of church and state, really, I think, to be a Republican today. And so that's why they brought out these people that have absolutely no influence in the National Republican Party. If you look at Tom DeLay, the person who controls Congress, he's nowhere to be seen. This very hard right player, someone who twists arms, someone who insists that moderates basically toe the line or they'll get punished, he was nowhere to be seen. The real face of the Republican Party, of course, is hidden. And I do think that that is the primary difference between the Republican National Convention and the Democrats. The Democrats put out people who represent Democrats. You may not like Ted Kennedy, and in fact, if you were a strategist, you'd probably hide Ted Kennedy. And yet Ted Kennedy had a prime speaking spot, as did Howard Dean, as did, of all people, Al Sharpton, as did Wesley Clark, the other people who ran against John Kerry. You know, this is a party that believes, at least in telling the truth about who they are. The Republicans, of course, were busy hiding. And I don't blame them, because if people knew who they were, well, they probably wouldn't vote for them. So let's go through some of the different speeches, and let's talk about them. The extreme makeover, if you will, of the Republican Party. I will start with John McCain. John McCain is probably the person I respect the most of any of those that have spoken so far. Not because on a social agenda, he's certainly more right-wing than I would want. But he definitely is someone who is generally very honest in saying how he feels, and he's not likely to be cowed by Bush. He made, I think, a strong argument for the Iraq War. And I want to respond to McCain's argument, because it was not a lie. It was a reasonable argument. And I want to hear from him and tell you how I would respond to what John McCain has to say. Let's hear from John McCain. We have some technical problems here. I have to figure out what's going on, why we're not hearing from John McCain like we should be. Tell you what, we're going to go to a commercial break and get those technical problems fixed. And when we come back, we're going to be playing the speeches of Monday and Tuesday and also getting your comments. All you have to do is dial in 877-57-SCOOP. What did you think of the Republican National Convention? Do you agree with the song that it was mostly propaganda? 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back.
Propaganda, propaganda. Goes down easy like a snifter of old brandy. Gotta learn how to tinker with that hook, line, and sinker for easy to swallow propaganda. If you want to stir the pot, make it look like you're not. Just add a shot of propaganda. If you want to rule the roost and you need a little boost, I recommend propaganda. Propaganda.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore to India, Pakistan, and elsewhere, or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accent and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all. I'm Jim Hightower, and I've approved this message.
Jim Hightower is not running for office, but he is back this campaign season with an important word about the regime of King George W.
Let's stop beating around the bush. These people are nuts.
Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush is Hightower's hilarious new best-selling book, offering you unvarnished facts, insight, and humor to get you through this year's political spin cycle. Buy Let's Stop Beating Around the Bush today and make politics fun again. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy it today.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
From their candy. It's so easy, it's a sin. You're gonna want to jump right in. You can always depend on propagandy. Life is so hard, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify the complex. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Propagandy.
Propagandy. Life is so hard, so confusing, everyone just trying to make ends meet. So you can brighten up their day, get facts out of their way, simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. And that is indeed what I think we've been seeing at the Republican National Convention. Simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. We see it when they attack John Kerry for wanting to fund the troops instead of wanting to borrow them on our credit card. Oh, he voted for and against the $87 billion. Simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. And I have to say, despite the fact I respect John McCain, we saw a lot of that in his speech Monday night. Simplify the complex, repeat, repeat. You'll notice, it is working, I'm going to be playing some of John McCain's speech. Note the conflation of the war against Al-Qaeda, the war against terrorism, the war against the people who killed 3,000 Americans, and the war in Iraq. He uses words like this war, the war, not specifying which war. This is actually the complaint I had yesterday with my two Republicans on the phone. They weren't specifying which war we were fighting. So you're going to see conflation of these two wars, and you're also going to see a misunderstanding, I think, a simplification of the kinds of things that, that we're fighting against. Let me play some of that text. I know some of you are on the line. Hang on. We'll get to your calls. Let me play some of John McCain's speech.
The awful events of September 11, 2001, declared a war we were vaguely aware of, but hadn't really comprehended how near the threat was and how terrible were the plans of our enemies. It's a big thing, this war. It's a fight between a just regard for human dignity and a malevolent force that defiles an honorable religion by disputing God's love for every soul on earth. It's a fight between right and wrong, good and evil.
Well, that's very powerful rhetoric. Very powerful rhetoric. And, of course, there's a lot of truth in that, right? It is an important war. It's a war that we didn't know about. But who is the war? Who is Al-Qaeda? And why the heck are we in Iraq? These are things that John McCain doesn't address. Let's go on with his speech a little bit more.
We are engaged in a hard struggle against a cruel and determined adversary. Our enemies have made clear the danger they pose to our security and the very essence of our culture, liberty. Only the most deluded of us could doubt the necessity of this war. Like all wars, this one will have its ups and downs. But we must fight. We must.
Fight against whom, John McCain? Who do we fight against? Who are our enemies? What war are we fighting? What is the war that we all agreed that we had to fight?
Foreign and our defense are not shared equally by all Americans. But all Americans must share a resolve to see this war through to a just end.
This war through to a just end. Which war? The war against Al-Qaeda? The war in Iraq. Let me go to the phones and see if you think the Republicans are still conflating these wars. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Who's this?
This is Brian from New Jersey.
Hey, Brian. Did you see some of the convention?
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment on Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele's speech.
Yeah, Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele is Lieutenant Governor of Maryland and probably the highest-ranking black person in, as far as I know. I mean, there are no blacks in Congress in the Republican Party and no black governors, so he's probably the highest ranking black official. Yeah, what did you want to talk about?
He started off all right. He said something. We must continue to be vigilant in our fight against the blight of poverty, poor education, and lost opportunity. And then he brings up that his mother worked for 45 years in a laundromat making minimum wage, and she didn't want public assistance because, as she put it, she didn't want the government raising her kids. What he failed to bring up is that people today, one family, can't live off of minimum wage, and that has everything to do with the past couple of administrations, and he just kind of briefed right over that and made it seem like, oh yeah, somebody today could work 40 hours a week at minimum wage and do the same thing my mom did, when he has to know that that's just not true.
Brian, that's a very good point, and I should note that without getting to too much personal stuff, my father grew up very poor, and he did work himself through college. He was able to earn enough in a summer job to actually pay for his state college, which was, I think, $500 a semester at the time. And you could do that 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. But you're absolutely right. The minimum wage has been dropping as far as, you know, when you compare to inflation, it's been dropping real minimum wages down and down and down, and Republicans don't want to raise it. So they want to harken back to a time when our country really did allow you to succeed. And things like the GI Bill, and, you know, if you went and you fought for your country, you could come home, get a decent education. There were lots of government programs that actually gave you a shot that date back to the New Deal that the Republicans are wiping out. You're not going to hear a lot of that rhetoric. I think it's a very good point you have to make, Brian.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Brian's dead on. You know, I noticed this, and in fact, when we talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger and we talk about Laura Bush's speech, one of the things I found most striking is that I felt they were quoting me. Many of you know I regularly debate Bush administration officials as part of the close-up program. I do live debates. They start in the fall, and then by the spring, there's often as twice a week. And in my stump speech, if you will, in my three-minute opening on why I'm a Democrat, I mention that Democrats believe that if you work hard and play by the rules, you can have a chance to succeed at the American dream. That's straight out of my speech. And when I heard Arnold Schwarzenegger say that, I was like, that's not what Republicans believe. That's not what Republicans believe at all. They believe in inherited wealth. All you have to do is look at George Bush's tax cuts. There are tax cuts for estate taxes if you inherit hundreds of millions of dollars because your dad's very rich. There are tax cuts for dividends if you have, you know, a lot of money to invest. But he wouldn't cut Social Security taxes, taxes for the ordinary working stiff. He wouldn't raise the minimum wage. He wouldn't provide for, in fact, he's cutting Pell Grants so that people can get a decent education. The No Child Left Behind Act that the Republicans, you know, Bush says, oh, look at all this funding we're giving to education. He didn't fund it. He promised to fund it, and then he didn't. Why do you think all those Democrats supported that bill with all its imperfections? Because they promised massive increases in funding. And instead, there were very minor increases, which led Ted Kennedy, who voted for the bill way back in the early Bush administration, to be very upset. So it was really striking to me to hear that kind of thing from Arnold Schwarzenegger. In fact, let me see if I can find that part of Arnold's speech. Well, you don't have to necessarily go in order, because I think Brian makes a good point. This is the thing that really surprised me, and it's part of Arnold Schwarzenegger's speech.
To my fellow immigrants listening tonight, I want you to know how welcome you are in this party. We Republicans admire your ambition. We encourage your dreams. We believe in your future. And one thing I learned about America is that if you work hard and if you play by the rules, this country is truly open to you. You can achieve anything.
Now, that was really clever. I mean, I believe in that. I believe in the American dream. That's why I'm a Democrat, because I think if you work hard and play by the rules, you should succeed. I don't think that if you don't work hard and don't play by the rules, you should. I'm a capitalist. I'm not a socialist. You know, everyone should have a basic minimum. They shouldn't die of starvation. They should have a basic education. They should have a roof over their head. But then rise or fall as your talents lie. To me, that's the essence of the Democratic Party. Provide a minimum standard of living and then let your talents take you away. Well, Schwarzenegger's claiming that's a Republican standard. And I think all we have to do is look at the president, their candidate. What did he do? Did he work hard? Did he play by the rules? No. He was drunk all the time. He was threatening his father with physical fights. He was, you know, using special favors to get out of Vietnam, not showing up on duty even when he was ordered to. He went AWOL from the base. This is a guy who won't say whether or not he had a massive cocaine problem. He won't talk about that, although there are certainly allegations about that. This is a guy who failed in every business but was never allowed to fail because his daddy's friends and the Saudi Arabians, who, of course, he continues to help today, they bailed him out. They gave him hundreds of millions of dollars because he was the son of the president. Is this the American dream? Now, you know what? I don't mind people who are born into wealth. There's nothing wrong with that. Look at the Kennedys. They're born into lots of wealth. And John Kerry did not grow up poor. John Kerry, even Theresa Hines Kerry, believes in using their wealth, in using their privilege to help others. And John Kerry, of course, went to Vietnam even though he was a person of privilege. He could have gotten out of the war. Most people with privilege could. So is this really right, Arnold? Is it really true the Republicans believe in equal opportunity? I don't think so. To believe in equal opportunity, you got to believe in education. You got to believe in a decent minimum wage. You got to believe that even if you're poor and even if you're homeless, I dare say, even if you're homeless, you should have a chance to re-enter America, a chance just to have basic shelter, food, basic education, so you can achieve the American dream. Because you know what, Arnold? Not all of us can be bodybuilders, right? Not all of us have that genetic talent. Let me read from some of the blog entries that I'm getting, and keep them coming, folks, because they're good. In terms of McCain, I have a comment here by Rod in New York. He asks, how do they do it? Is it done with mirrors or creative video editing? How do they hide McCain's vomiting and head spinning? Demonic possession has to be the reason he's acting so freakishly. I, for one, frequently drink Gatorade to replace the electric lights I lose when I puke all over my television. Ooh, boy. Look. And he goes on to say that he vomits from disgust at the lies, the euphemism. Republicans regurgitate the force-fed crap they get from their tough-love, abusive parents on faux news. I like that, faux news instead of Fox News. You know, what's interesting to me is that, and again, I wrote my piece on the Swift Boat Liars on their projection. that you see a lot of projection in the Republican Party. You see a lot of saying, oh, we tell the truth, the Democrats tell lies. Again, the Democrats were trying to be positive, not trying to call the president on all his lies. I actually disagree with the Democrats. I think they were way too nice at their convention. I said that yesterday, and I keep it up. I think we've got to be a lot meaner if we're going to win this, because when we're positive and they're negative, the American people in the middle who aren't watching this closely say, oh, it just looks like everybody's negative. They don't notice that we're being positive and they're negative. But, I mean, just listen to the beginning of Arnold Schwarzenegger's speech, Rod. I mean, to me, this tells you that just the kind of tone here.
Speaking of acting, one of my movies was called True Lies. And that's what the Democrats should have called their convention.
Okay, you know, cheap shot. The Democrats are liars. But he doesn't give specifics. He's just, oh, okay, well, they're liars. I don't know. To me, that's just sort of a juvenile argument. I do want to read a little bit more of McCain's speeches, and I want to get back to your blog. I'm reading it right now as we speak, which I probably shouldn't do two things at once. I do think it's important, though, and we'll go back to McCain just a little bit more, that we make clear that he is not specifying what war he's talking about. In fact, I thought McCain actually gave a very strong speech in some ways for the Democrats when he describes what the Democrats support in terms of national security. Let me play some of that for you.
My friends in the Democratic Party, and I'm fortunate to call many of them my friends, assure us they share the conviction that winning the war against terrorism is our government's most important obligation. I don't doubt their sincerity. They emphasize that military action alone won't protect us, that this war has many fronts, in courts, financial institutions, in the shadowy world of intelligence, and in diplomacy. They stress that America needs the help of her friends to combat an evil that threatens us all, that our alliances are as important to victory as our armies. We agree. And as we've been a good friend to other countries in moments of shared perils, so we have good reason to expect their solidarity with us in this struggle.
Now, did you hear that? I think he gave quite a compelling argument for democratic foreign policy. The idea that we can't go it alone. The idea that we do need help. He says we agree, but of course we know that the Republicans don't. We have a president who basically said, you know, F you, I'm going it alone. If you be with me or against me, I'm not going to give you more time to do inspectors to see if they really have weapons of mass destruction. I don't care. I'm going it alone. You know, little countries, join in or else. In fact, some of the greatest applause lines we got is when the speakers were saying, avoid international alliances, avoid the UN, don't try to work with other countries. Those got some of the lines. So it was very interesting to see McCain saying, well, you know, we're just like the Democrats, we agree. No, you're not. And if you were, well, yeah, we wouldn't have these issues. Let me play just a little bit more from his speech.
After years of failed diplomacy and limited military pressure to restrain Saddam Hussein, President Bush made the difficult decision to liberate Iraq. Let us argue our differences, but remember, we are not enemies, but comrades in a war against a real enemy, and take courage from the knowledge that our military superiority is matched only by the superiority of our ideals and our unconquerable love for them.
Again, these are the arguments that I've been making, that it's our ideals that win wars, not our military might. But if we say that we have an enemy that's implacable, that just has to be destroyed, then we don't seek to understand them. Now, I'll be the first to say, Osama bin Laden's never going to be our friend. Al-Qaeda has to be destroyed. I supported the war in Afghanistan. Of course it has to go. But 98% of Egyptians in the latest poll hate us, even though we give their government $1 billion a year. Do you think that has anything to do with September 11th? No, that has to do with our war in Iraq. And when McCain tries to justify the war in Iraq, I think he gets caught up a bit in his own rhetoric. But I want you to hear it. It's strong. Let's hear what he says.
War is an awful business. The lives of a nation's finest patriots are sacrificed. Innocent people suffer. Commerce is disrupted. Economies are damaged. Strategic interests, shielded by years of statecraft, are endangered as the demands of war and diplomacy conflict. However just the cause, we should mourn for all that is lost when war claims its wages from us. But there is no avoiding this war. We tried that, and our reluctance cost us dearly.
Basically, his point, and he's right to some extent, after all, George Bush ignored the memos about bin Laden returned to attack the United States, is again to conflate the two wars. And I just don't think that's justified. Let's move on to Giuliani, who also, I think, does a little bit of conflation himself. Let's listen to his opening speech.
Welcome to the capital of the world. New York was the first capital of our great nation. It was here in 1789, in Lower Manhattan, that George Washington took the oath of office as the first president of the United States. And it was here in 2001, in the same Lower Manhattan, that President George W. Bush stood amid the fallen towers of the World Trade Center, and he said to the barbaric terrorists who attacked us, "They will hear from us." Well, they heard from us. They heard from us in Afghanistan, and we removed the Taliban. They heard from us in Iraq, and we ended Saddam Hussein's reign of terror. And we put him where he belongs, in jail. They heard from us in Libya, and without firing a shot, Gaddafi abandoned his weapons of mass destruction.
Pretty strong stuff. In fact, I think Giuliani is a lot more persuasive than John McCain. But that's one of the reasons why I played it. I don't just want to play where they make mistakes. Let's listen to some of their strong arguments, and let's deal with it one by one. Okay? George Bush, as we talked about yesterday, did go to Lower Manhattan, stood on the ruins, and vowed that we would reply. I'm glad he finally got around to doing that on the Friday after the Tuesday, September 11th. I, frankly, was wondering on Tuesday, where was our president? I was very angry, as I think most Americans were, angry, shocked, sad, on September 11th. And I remember waiting to hear from my president, even if he wasn't elected. I was ready to hear him say, "We're going to get him," and he didn't. I didn't hear anything at all. I later found out he was hiding in a plane over Nebraska. Well, our president's never been known for great courage. But I do know that any president, and I remember thinking to myself, God, I wish Bill Clinton were president, because he was someone who would immediately stand firm. And I'm glad that George Bush eventually did get to New York and say, "Stand firm." That's the right thing to do. And he, in fact, went up in the polls to like 80-90% for doing that. But how did they hear from us? Well, Giuliani points out that they heard from us in Afghanistan, we removed the Taliban. Have we? Frequent listeners to this show can click on my archive with Seema Wali, and you can find out the Taliban is very much in power in Afghanistan still today. Its leader, Mullah Omar, do you remember that name? Most Americans probably don't even know who that is. That is the leader of the country that housed Al-Qaeda. He's still at loose. Osama bin Laden, of course, was let go at Tora Bora out of the incompetence of the Bush administration, and we withdrew tens of thousands of troops from Afghanistan to fight the war in Iraq. And now the Taliban's still there. And Seema Wali and other Afghanis will tell you it's just as dangerous for women. It's not good. It's a country of warlords. Maybe if we had spent a little more time, a little more effort in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, we would have captured Osama bin Laden. Now maybe we got him hidden and we're waiting for the October surprise. You never know. But I do think that should have been our first priority. Giuliani then goes on and says that we ended Saddam Hussein's reign of terror. Well, I love the fact that Republicans, who were all exercised about weapons of mass destruction that weren't there, and claimed he had nuclear weapons that weren't there and aren't doing anything about North Korea or Iran's nuclear weapons, are so exercised about Saddam Hussein's reign of terror. You know what? Saddam Hussein, as authoritarian dictators go, wasn't so bad as others. Now, hey, I know, you're going to call in, and many of you are going to talk about the gassing of the Kurds in the 1980s. That was awful. I remember calling my congressman about that and being angry at my government, led by Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, for selling the chemical weapons used by Saddam Hussein to kill the Kurds. Because we supported those efforts. That, after all, is when Don Rumsfeld went there to shake Saddam Hussein's hand. Since that time, Saddam Hussein's been relatively contained. Your typical authoritarian dictator. Kind of like Castro. Why haven't we overthrown Castro, by the way? Kind of like, Syria, or Saudi Arabia, or Egypt, or for that matter, Pakistan, right? They're all authoritarian dictators that lock up their political opponents. There are, of course, far more worse atrocities, and we've talked about them on this program. I don't have to go in detail to explain to you what's going on, the genocide in Sudan. It looks like there may be genocide in Ethiopia as well. The Liberian crisis, where actually the dictator was so brutal he would kill kids' parents and then draft them in his children's army. I mean, really gruesome stuff. Please, don't tell me we're in Iraq for humanitarian reasons. If you want to argue we need to be there because it's got a lot of oil, fine, at least I understand that reason. Just don't tell me we're there for humanitarian reasons. It doesn't pass the laugh test. And please don't tell me there to fight terrorism either, because Iraq never attacked us. Indeed, Libya attacked us, and Giuliani is praising the fact that we left Gaddafi in power. If we're going to base it on who attacked us, you know, Libya killed Americans. They knocked down the plane over Lockerbie, Scotland, killing a number of Americans, murdering them. Why haven't we gotten rid of Gaddafi? Oh, because he said he abandoned his weapons of mass destruction. Well, you know what? Saddam Hussein said the same thing. And Hussein allowed inspectors in too. What is the difference between Libya and Hussein? Both of them claimed to give up their weapons of mass destruction and allowed inspectors in. Why do we invade one and not the other? And why do we praise both acts, invading one and not the other, and pretend like it's not inconsistent? Pretend like it's not a flip-flop? See, all you have to do is use a little bit of logic here, and these speeches come apart. It's all propaganda, my friends. Simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. And that, of course, is our song by Yikes McGee today. I'm going to play a little bit of it as we go out to the commercial. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Bush kids, and Laura Bush. We'll also take your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back.
Propaganda, propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda. Propaganda, propaganda. Try and convince the folks that beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they see with their own eyes. It's amazing. Propaganda. Life is so complex, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make.
In a moment of theological reflection, Woody Allen once declared, "I believe there is something out there watching us. Unfortunately, it's the government." Woody's little joke has become today's chilling reality as the Bush-Ashcroft regime has imposed measure after measure of new autocratic police power to keep watch over we the people. All of this has been done under the guise of fighting terrorists, but the government's focus increasingly is shifting from them to us. The latest example is the FBI's heavy-handed push to harass, intimidate, and suppress ordinary citizens who seek to protest governmental or corporate policies. Prior to the national conventions of both the Republican and Democratic parties, the so-called Justice Department dispatched federal agents to at least six states to trail and grill potential protesters. As one young protester put it, the government agents were trying to, quote, let us know that, hey, we're watching you. This repressive knock on the door by authorities is not merely directed at targets known to be plotting criminal activity, but at citizens who were simply planning to attend legitimate protests. Ashcroft himself asserts that these people might perhaps possibly could have the potential to do something criminal, or that they might perhaps possibly could know someone who could do so. The Justice Department's infamous Office of Legal Policy okayed this vague, big brotherish assault on our individual liberty by declaring that any chilling of the right to dissent would be outweighed by the need for order. Of course, bullying autocrats have always donned the dark cloak of order to rationalize their repression. The Bush-Ashcroft use of FBI snoops to intimidate today's dissenters is not about preventing crime, but about preventing protest. This is Jim Hightower saying, to protest their crude attempt to lock down protest, call the ACLU, 212-549-2500.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
If you want to rule the roost and you need a little boost, I recommend Propagandy. Propagandy.
Propagandy. Of course, that's the tune of the Republican National Convention. And it's the tune that many of you are pointing out on the blog. Rod writes, does the American public realize that these people speaking at the RNC are the most duplicitous kind of window dressing there is? Politicians and personalities that believe in a woman's right to choose and defy the unconstitutionality of the ban on gay marriage, for example, they are not who is leading this country and will never be. Giuliani has become the worst kind of mercenary, pulling the scab off the more grisly wounds of 9/11, and Laura Stepford Bush tweeted about regular women while her eyes crept up her forehead in different directions under the power of stretched skin. Why don't we hear about Schwarzenegger's performance to date? I can't imagine California is doing any better than any other huge economy in America. I want to go ahead and play a little bit more from Arnold Schwarzenegger's speech before we move on. This, as I think, the heart of his speech. It's how he defined who is a Republican. Let's listen in. It was actually one of the stronger points of his speech.
My fellow immigrants, my fellow Americans, how do you know if you're a Republican? Well, I tell you how. If you believe that government should be accountable to the people, not the people to the government, then you are a Republican.
How ironic, given that George Bush did not support any of the commissions and did not believe that there should be any investigation into what he did. Accountable.
If you believe that a person should be treated as an individual, not as a member of an interest group, then you are a Republican.
Really, I would think that Enron would be very surprised to hear that, and all the other oil companies that have gotten benefits, all the other Republican interest groups.
If your family knows how to spend your money better than the government does, then you are a Republican.
That's interesting, given the statistics that show that, in fact, the middle class has a higher tax burden under the Republicans than the Democrats, with most of that money going to corporate welfare.
If you believe that our educational system should be held accountable for the progress of our children, then you are a Republican.
Then why is it the Republicans are trying to push kids out of public school and into private religious schools?
If you believe that this country, not the United Nations, is best hope for democracy, then you are a Republican.
And that, of course, got his biggest line. Now, I have certainly criticized the United Nations. I do not think they are a democratic organization. I've got real problems with the United Nations. But to me, the question is not about the United Nations. It's a question about international support. And that, of course, that McCain said that we agree. But you can hear from the way that people are shouting that it's all about, in fact, they started chanting, USA, USA. It's that kind of nationalism, this belief that we're better than the rest of the world. You know, look, I happen to believe we are better, okay? I mean, I am as patriotic as the next guy. I do think America has got something very special to offer. We are a country of immigrants from all around the world, people who were thrown out of other countries for economic or political or religious reasons. They can make it in America. I believe in the American dream. But I also don't believe in the arrogance of thumbing your nose at the world and saying we're better than the rest of you. Let's just know we're better, if you will. I don't think that it helps to basically thumb your nose, use the finger, whatever the word is, at the rest of the world. I want to move on, though. We've got only a little bit of time left. A lot of you talked about the Bush kids. And, yeah, that was one of the more embarrassing performances last night. Let's play some of what the Bush kids, Jenna and Barbara, had to say last night.
Ganey, we love you dearly, but you're just not very hip.
They're talking about their grandmother, Barbara Bush.
She thinks Sex and the City is something married people do but never talk about.
Ooh, you know what, girls? Maybe you should also leave the humor to the professionals. Giggle, giggle. It's... And then here I think comes the best line, like father, like daughters.
We spent the last 4 years trying to stay out of the spotlight. Sometimes we did a little better job than others. We kept trying to explain to my dad that when we were young and irresponsible, well, we were young and irresponsible.
Now see, that was very interesting to me, right? I mean, that, of course, is the one line Bush didn't want anyone to remember. That, of course, he was young and irresponsible, and that he basically said, I've always been, you know, when I was young and irresponsible, I was young and irresponsible. I'm responsible now. Ooh. To me, the kids very much showed that they didn't fall too far from the tree. They said they weren't very interested in politics. You know, look, I don't blame them for being, in essence, frat girls, like their father was a frat boy, interested in drinking and having a good time. You know, that's fine. But it was a striking difference, don't you think, between them and the Kerry girls, with their poise and dignity and really poignant stories about their father. Even the very cute story about the hamster, which let's see who it was that pointed out on my blog. I had a comment here. This is from Brian from New Jersey. He said, did anyone notice the Bush twins said they had a hamster as well, like the Kerry girls? But, and this is true, the Bush girls said that ours didn't make it. Brian says, well, duh, Kerry saves lives. Bush takes them. And yet, to me, you do learn something by looking at kids. I don't mean to blame everyone. You can have all kinds of kids, but... It just strikes me that this kind of sort of giddy, tell a joke, everyone wants to like you. Bush very much reminds me of, and maybe, I think we've all known him, the big man on campus, right? The guy whose daddy is powerful and so struts around like he's powerful and wants to be everybody's friend, but if you criticize him, make sure that, you're blackballed. That to me is the kind of person George W. Bush is. Not the kind of guy you want to be friends with him because he's powerful, maybe, but not because he's a nice guy. And, he's sort of drinking a lot, but it strikes me that the girls very much were like their father. And this comment also I found very interesting by the Bush girls.
When your dad's a Republican and you go to Yale, you learn to stand up for yourself.
just that comment, which got a lot of cheers by the audience. It's an anti-intellectualism. I mean, let's face it. The Republican Party has grown to become the party of those that dislike knowledge, dislike intellectuals, It's true, and I admit it. As an Ivy League graduate myself, Republicans aren't too well-liked. But I don't know, just the way they cheered, it strikes me that these are people that really don't prize... we know they don't prize nuance. They don't prize intellect. They don't prize working to solve a problem. I do want to finish, and we just got a few moments left, by playing some of Laura Bush's speech. Now, Laura Bush, she came on. They played a song... The song was, Isn't She Lovely? right? And then she got up in front of this floral pattern. And to me, she really was, I'm sorry, the Stepford wife. She was, I'm going to sit there and smile and be behind my husband and not be a strong, independent human being. I mean, the contrast with her and Teresa Hines Carey couldn't be more sharp. And I think it's largely the difference between Democratic women and Republican women and the roles that people imagine. Democratic women are raised to stick up for themselves, to be strong, independent human beings, to believe that a marriage is a partnership where both sides should have an equal say. That is how Democrats raise their girls. Republicans, I think, will raise their girls to be like the First Lady. Demure, feminine, stand behind your man, you know, be quiet, and don't get too much into policy. Don't worry your little pretty head. That, to me, you know, that's a lot of who Laura Bush stands for. I'm not saying she's stupid. I'm saying that she puts on this persona of the demure person, and she really didn't have much to say in her speech. I had to sort of search to find policy things that were stuck in her speech. I could find a few, though, and I do want to play them for you. This to me, I thought was very interesting because it strike again. It's this conflation of the war in Afghanistan with the war in Iraq. Let's listen in.
As we gather in this hall and around our television sets tonight, Joshua Crane stands watch aboard the USS John C. Stennis. His brothers, Matthew and Nicholas, stand watch near Fallujah. And at home in Colorado, their mother, Cindy, stands watch too with worry and prayer. She told me all three of her sons enlisted after September 11th because they recognized the threat to our country.
Now, I want you to think about that. I got to say, after September 11th, on September 11th, as I watched what happened, as I watched the World Trade Center burn to the ground, I considered enlisting myself. I thought about it, and I knew that the Army probably wouldn't take me. In fact, almost certainly wouldn't take me. But at least it crossed my mind. I wanted to do what I could. I remember thinking, you know, should I give blood? What can I do to help my country? And of course, we had a president saying, you don't need to do anything, just keep shopping. But I understand that. Maybe if I, you know, were a different person 20 years younger, who knows what I would have done. But I respect those young men who have decided to enlist. I think that's terrific. They decided to enlist because of what happened on September 11th. I totally understand that emotion. I respect it. But they're in Fallujah. Why are they in Fallujah? I don't know exactly what Osama bin Laden is, but you know what? He ain't in Fallujah. He's not there, folks. And so these three boys, these three young men who signed up to give their life for their country, this very poignant story, they're all in Iraq. They're all in Iraq. I mean, it's like if somebody comes into your home and shoots and kills your wife, right? Instead of going out to get him, you go out to get some, I don't know, someone who's littering. I mean, it's amazing. We have people risking their lives who've joined the fight on September 11th that are fighting the wrong war. And again, of course, that's too complex. That's too nuanced for the Republican propaganda. But hey, that's what we're doing here on the air is we're trying to explain the kinds of things that they're saying and what they mean. And we're going to do that on and on this next week, the week after. Let me play one more comment. Do I have time? Sure, I got one more comment here by Laura Bush.
Our parents' generation confronted tyranny and liberated millions. As we do the hard work of confronting today's threat, we can also be proud that 50 million more men, women, and children live in freedom thanks to the United States of America and our allies.
They live in freedom? She hasn't been listening to my show. She hasn't been looking at news reports from Iraq and Afghanistan. They do not live in freedom. The Taliban's coming back in Afghanistan. We have this little tight area around Kabul that we control. And in Iraq, we are giving up. We are letting the terrorists go. We're letting al-Sadr, right, who's killed Americans, go free and all his men rearm. And they are determined to keep fighting until we leave Iraq. Who's free here. Let's not pretend. Laura Bush goes on in that same speech to talk about the Olympics, just like Bush did, which of course is against the rules of the International and the American Olympic Committees. Oops. Using the Olympics for political goals is exactly contrary to the purpose of the Olympics. Oops. But they're not free. I mean, it's just a lie. It's propaganda. I hope one day they are free. I really do. But they're not. And let's stop lying to the American people. I want to read a few of your comments before we hang up here. We got comments by Nathan, one of our conservative listeners, who writes, "Yeah, could have done without the Bush twins last night. I hear they're quite intelligent. I have yet to witness this for myself, though." Got a comment by Rick. "I wonder if Ken Lay and his pals at Enron feel playing by the rules is an important part of the Republican mantra. Maybe Arnold should ask Kenny Boy about that." And then Brian from New Jersey. "After September 11th, and you just hit the nail on the head, Mark, when the country told me to keep shopping, I wanted to cry. This war is manufactured. Let's wake up. Check out www.infowars.com. These are scary times. Thanks for what you do, Mark." Brian goes on in another comment. "It's really sad. It's hard to see. It's not hard to see," Brian writes, "why it has happened. The information is available, yet no one cares to look. Making us work for more than 40 hours a week to achieve a middle-class lifestyle is how they shackle us." And Brian, hey, I'd add that they're stopping overtime, too. Remember that. Brian writes, "If we had time to sit down and care about the problems of the world, I believe we would. Nobody wants to see their life and world fall apart due to war, famine, or any other problem. The problem is propaganda, as the song says. It's so easily transferred these days, and people feel defeated. So we need to stand up, listen to people like Mark, get away from their bull, and change the pace." Hey, Brian, you know, that's what I try to do, right? That's what I try to do every day. Is, you know, it's really hard when we're telling, you know, think about it like if you're an undecided voter. You got two people telling you things that are contradictory. And the Democrats are telling the truth, and the Republicans largely, and the Republicans are largely lying. And it's very hard to sort it out. It's like the Swift Boat veterans. You have to actually read the Navy documents to know that Kerry's allies are telling the truth and Bush's front isn't, right? Or on the AWOL documents, you have to actually read the documents. Or you have to actually look at economic statistics. You have to actually look at the empirical facts. But I do believe, I still believe, I still have a dream that one day the actual facts will be taken into consideration. One day, American press will actually report on the facts and say the Republican ad is false. That one day they will say the Democrats are telling the truth, the Republicans are false, and here's the proof. There is such a thing as objective fact, folks. And all you have to do, you can listen to this show, you can listen to all kinds of other shows, show that proof. When someone says to you, well, I don't know who's telling the truth, Swift Boat War veterans, you say, I do. They have the documents. Let's look at the documents together. And you sit them down and you show them. If they say the economy's improving, you show them job statistics. If they say the middle class are paying less taxes, you show them the statistics of the nonpartisan government offices, right? I mean, you know, their government, if anyone would control them, it'd be Bush, explaining the middle class has a higher tax burden. Folks, the facts are with us. The problem is that the undecided are too busy with their lives, and I understand that. They're very busy working, taking the kids to school. They're too busy to stop and look at the facts, and yet they have to. They've got to. This is a democracy, and if the Republicans don't commit fraud, another thing we have to worry about, in the voting election, the American people will, I hope, finally in 2004, again have the right to choose the President of the United States. And the only way to do that is with facts. And if you don't support John Kerry because you, you know, believe that a one-celled creature has more rights than a child with diabetes, that's fine. That's a real reason. But do it based on facts. Don't do it based on, as the song says, propaganda. Because they will do exactly as the song says, try to simplify the complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. And it's our job to let people know that it's not all that simple. And the facts are on our side. This is Mark Levine. I want to finish, as I'm starting to do every show, with a quote by John Kerry. "Don't love your country right or wrong. That's like loving your mother drunk or sober. Love your country when it's right, and when it's wrong, put it right." This is Mark Levine. Until tomorrow, signing off. You can always depend on propaganda.
Life is so hard, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way. Just simplify their complex, repeat, repeat, repeat. Propaganda, propaganda. If you need to change the subject, it's a dandy. If you want to wag the dog, it's like falling off a log. It's so easy with propaganda, propaganda, propaganda. Try and convince the folks the beach is never sandy. You can convert into lies what they see with their own eyes. It's amazing, propaganda. Life is so complex, so confusing. Everyone's just trying to make ends meet. You can brighten up their day, keep the facts out of their way.